Welcome to the August meeting of the Board of Land Commissioners. See, we have everyone here. First is to approve the minutes. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Let's go to the first action item.
Land Board members, item one is the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Whitefish Lake Watershed Project. Stillwater Lazy Swift. This is a conservation easement, and the department is here to present.
Good morning, Governor, members of the Land Board. My name is Darlene Edge. I'm the Lands Program Manager for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. This is a rather complicated project, but just to preface everything, I'm here today to get approval on the conservation easement on 13 sections of property that is currently owned by Weyerhaeuser. And I will start with showing you where the project is. This is the... Actually, I have a laser here. So this is the project area. This is a Stillwater State Forest. And Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has been working with several different entities. I want to point out the collaboration between the Trust for Public Lands, which has been the lead. Some of the funding has come from the Forest Service Forest Legacy Program, the Habitat Conservation Program through the Fish, Wildlife Service. Bonneville Power is a big participant, and obviously DNRC is a big partner in this project. The project area is 21 sections, 13,398 acres, and it's going to be, the department will do a two-phased conservation easement. The first phase will be on the sections in blue, and the second phase will be on the sections in brown. The first phase is funded. And the funding sources for that are Forest Legacy will be $7 million, Fish, Wildlife Service HCP program will be $2 million, Habitat Montana, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks portion is $1 million, and then TPL is putting in $2 million for a total of $12 million. That money is in the bank. So once I go through the how the steps are going to work, we can close on that sometime in early 2018. The second phase, the brown, is all the grants have been submitted, and we're waiting for the budget to be approved, the federal budget to be approved. And once that's approved, then the Trust for Public Lands feels very strongly that these grants will be funded. So with that, the process. TPL has a purchase agreement with, or an option agreement with Weyerhaeuser, and by the end of September they will exercise their option and they will close on the 21 sections in the entire project. That includes these hatched sections on the side as well. The next step will be for BPA will come in and acquire these sections on the side, the five sections, and those will be donated, if approved by the Land Board, to DNRC. Bonneville Power will hold a conservation easement on that property. And my understanding is, and Sean and Mike are here to speak to more specifics to that, but my understanding is they're working with BPA and they pretty much worked out the details on that. As far as the conservation easement that FWP will be acquiring, once we acquire phase one in early 2018, then simultaneously DNRC will come in and buy the underlying fee from TPL. And the same is true with the second phase. Once it's funded and FWP would acquire that conservation easement upon your approval, then DNRC would come in and purchase the underlying fee under phase two. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission approved this phase one and phase two conservation easement August 10th this year unanimously. There was public process. The EA went out June 13th through July 12th. 34 comments were received. All were positive. The conservation easement terms. We've worked with DNRC to make sure that they're compatible with timber production. The conservation easement would protect native fish and wildlife habitat. It would also protect public access for recreation hunting and fishing. Some motorized designated routes are available, and the balance of the property would be available for the public for non-motorized use. It would protect the water quality, scenic views, local and regional economic benefits for forest products and tourism, protection against wildfire through a managed healthy forest, and provide funds for the Common School Trust. The second phase of the property, if funded, would of the conservation easement acquisition phase two, $4 million from Forest Legacy, Fish and Wildlife Service, HCP $2 million, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks would put in $1 million, and Trust for Public Lands would put in $1 million. So again, what we're asking for from you today is just approval on the acquisition of a conservation easement on phase one and phase two of this project.
Thank you, Darlene. Is it public comment? Or do I do motion first? Public comment. Any public comment? Is there a motion?
Governor, I move approval of item 817-1.
Great. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? You got it. Howard Rosendale.
Darlene, I think you guys have done an incredible job putting all this together. This is a complex deal, but it looks like a really, really good thing. I've talked to DNRC, I've talked to FWP, I've talked to residents up in Whitefish area. My question is that as we move forward and we see the difference between phase one and phase two, and then the properties that Bonneville Energy are going to have an easement on, is there a dramatic difference between the other easements and what Bonneville is going to have as far as what management practices and timber harvesting will be able to take place in those areas?
Commissioner Rosendale, I think I'm going to defer that to Mike or Sean as they're working with BPA now.
Good morning, Governor, members of the Land Board. For the record, I'm Sean Thomas, the Trust Lands Division Administrator with the DNRC. Auditor Rosendale and Governor, what we're looking for is the answer to what the differences are between the potential easements. So phase one and phase two of the issue before you today are the same. The language is agreed for the whole of that entire piece. The BPA piece is different. We are still in negotiations with Bonneville Power Administration and their officials as to what exactly that will look like. We think that substantively we've agreed to general terms on what the management would be in the future. And so the funding source that BPA is applying has a higher level of conservation and protection for various resources than what would be our normal management regime. So, in fact, on the BPA sections, they will be managed differently. We have not agreed to final terms on what that management exactly would look like. We have set a threshold that we need to be able to do at least 25% of what we would do across the board otherwise. The lands would be coming to us as trust lands for free, so we wouldn't need to have sort of the same level of management and revenue production that we would see on our other land base. But we've said that if we can't get 25%, then we're uncomfortable moving forward. We're pretty confident that where we sit as of today, that 25% is doable. What we would have is a regime of management across the landscape that would sort of promote a managed older stand of timber. So that's primarily the difference. We would lengthen out our rotation age for the timber stands, but there would be management that would go along with looking for those particular older stand attributes. Wider stream buffers would be part of this, and less management within those. But we're pretty confident that we will retain 25% of our existing management regime and enough management that we can sort of prevent forest health concerns, wildfire risk, et cetera.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was getting to, because as we've seen over the last 30 days, that there's properties throughout the state that with all those additional fuels that have been accumulating for years because they have not been managed, it's causing us dramatic problems. Are the other two easements and transfers of properties in any way tied to the Bonneville property, or if that easement is not agreed to, can we still go forward with phase one and phase two of the other easements and transfers?
Governor, Auditor Rosendale, yes, we can definitely move forward from DNRC's perspective with any one of the three parts solely by itself. Whether or not the entire deal is compromised is a question that I probably would have to defer to the Trust for Public Lands folks, who I know are here today and could answer how that fits into the larger picture of how the funding and all that other stuff works. From DNRC's perspective, any one of them by itself or any one of them in conjunction with the BPA one would work just fine from our perspective.
And Governor, Auditor, I would just mention, too, that the BPA sections weren't just carved out randomly. They sit on Swift Creek and Lazy Creek within the riparian zone. So if you can see on the map, those are the critical water corridors within the purchase property, which is why BPA is focused, and the increased conservation that goes with it is focused on those sections.
Additional questions or comments? Any additional discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Next action item.
Item 2 is Fish, Wildlife, and Park Keogh Ranch Conservation Easement. Again, the department is available for presentation.
Governor, members of the Land Board, again, I'm Darlene Edge, Lands Program Manager with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. The second project is kind of a unique project as the first that we brought before you. It's a conservation easement that the department does hold on 7,106 acres. It's referred to as the Keogh Conservation Easement. It's just north of Whitehall. And the reason we're bringing this forward is when we first did this conservation easement in 1996, for whatever reason, the department had language in their conservation easement which would provide the landowner the opportunity to sell off 160-acre parcels or greater to for agricultural use only to anyone, typically an adjacent landowner. And in this situation, the southern portion of this property, this 7,106 acres, is being south of it is being subdivided. So we took a look at this and the impact that could have on the conservation easement would be significant. There are up to 44 tracts that could technically be sold off to an adjacent landowner for ag purposes. So there's other benefits to doing this this amendment. And as soon as I find it, one of them was the protection of the water rights. The conservation easement that currently sits on that property or exists on that property does not really protect that water to be maintained with that ranch. So what we've done is asked the landowner if he would be willing to tighten up that. And this landowner has been on that ranch for, I think, three, four generations, and they want to protect those water rights with that ranch as well. Their old water rights and their senior water rights. We want to, again, eliminate the 160-acre subdivision language for ag purposes. We also getting to Commissioner Rosendale's concerns, when we first did this conservation easement, we prohibited almost all timber harvesting. And what we found, obviously, is that that probably wasn't the smartest move on our part back in 1996. And so we would like to loosen up that language so that the landowner can go in and do some managed timber harvesting to protect from what we're incurring today. There's also the ability to move a feedlot out of a partial riparian area, and the landowner has agreed to all of these suggested amendments. So we commissioned an appraiser to take a look at what that value would be from the existing conservation easement and then the acquisition of additional terms, rights from that landowner. And what we came up with, what I came up with, after discussions with the landowner, is we figured it was fair to take the 5% of the fair market value and associate that with the conservation easement. Now, conservation easements aren't split out like 20% for public access or a certain percentage for a grazing system, or, you know, it's not broken out like that. It's just what an appraiser will do is look at the terms of a conservation easement, find something comparable, and then that's what the diminution is for that conservation easement. Well, when we did the original easement, it was a 41% diminution. And the way the easement will read today, when you look at comparable conservation easement, that diminution would be about 50 to 60%. So what I came up with was I thought that with the water rights, with the subdivision language, there's not market data that an appraiser can go and latch onto. So we discussed it internally and came up with 5%, which is the $213,000 that the department would pay to the landowner to amend this conservation easement. The department put out an environmental assessment, and public comments were received. One was supportive, one was thought the price was too high. Our commission, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission, approved this on August 10th. So we're asking the land board to approve it as well.
Thanks, Darlene. Is there any public comment?
Governor and members of the commission, my name is Randy Knowles, and I'm from Great Falls, Montana. As I read through this, it reminded me of the tax institute I attended last year in Missoula, and one of the topics that's been pretty popular over the last 3-4 years has been easements, conservation easements. And last year was the first time we started hearing stories about court cases, because conservation easements have to be managed, and we kind of forget about them. We do them, and then we forget about them. And the moral of the story is we can't forget about them. And this is just a really good example of they have to be managed. They have to be reviewed on a regular basis and updated. Conservation easements are a changing creature. They haven't really been around that long, so we're still in the development stages. So this is probably not the last change that you're going to see in a conservation easement, based on the history that I observed last year. So this is a really good move, and it's just a really good example of there's a lot more work. There's not going to be a lack of work in the future with conservation easements.
Mr. Knowles, additional public comment. Is there a motion?
Governor, I'll move approval of item 817-2.
Is there a second? Is there a second? Can I second?
I would defer to you, Governor, on that one.
I don't think you can move, but I think you can second.
Yeah.
I will second it. Discussion.
Governor, these funds to place this additional easement on top of the existing easement are coming out of the Habitat Montana program, and I just feel that there are so many other things that can be done to improve habitat for wildlife around the state and manage some of the resources that we've been directing purchases towards that would be far superior to habitat creation and maintenance than this particular easement, that I cannot support the use of these funds that way.
Additional questions?
I had a question, Governor. How do you, this is in general, how do you get rid of a conservation easement once it's in place?
Well, I guess this is Bullock being a lawyer. Maybe I better defer to the Attorney General now because I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, is it forever?
Can it you is. It's a perpetual easement, but as I think times change where certainly in 1996, at least my understanding is that it wasn't common to have the same pieces that are now being put in today, and that's why it's being put in today.
And Governor, DFWP is the holder of the easement. You have a willing landowner who's the owner of the underlying property. And so you have all the parties that have negotiated a contract, an easement, agreeing that it needs to be amended to allow for timber harvest and that it needs to be amended to protect against further subdivision. So,
and to further protect the water rights, because you could end up
in the water rights
over 7,000.
So I think there could be issues if there was a reduced level of conservation, although I believe that has also been done with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's earliest easements. But this is an increased level of conservation that the landowner is willing to sell those additional bundles of rights to the purchaser, DFWP.
Governor, question for Darlene? Or multiple questions, actually. The EA mentions that there's pressure from adjacent landowners to buy horse pastures, et cetera, which I'm assuming is part of why this is being, why it's being driven, is there's some concern there that the landowner will sell or lease certain parcels for various agricultural purposes, which is the only thing that's left to be allowed, correct?
Correct.
What facts do we have to support that?
Well, the when there's subdivision, our concern is that one of those landowners that owns a 20-acre tract may be willing to come in and pay for 160 acres for a horse pasture or just expand their ownership. And the other part of this that I've failed to mention is that when you have a 7,106-acre conservation easement, if they were to split off even half of that land, it's still all under conservation easement, but what the problem is managing that. Every year, and Mr. Knowles pointed this out, every year we have a land steward who is here today that goes out and monitors every one of our conservation easements. And if they're split, that's an extra monitoring unit. When we develop a conservation easement, we put a rest rotation grazing system on them, which is the entire property. We also have a requirement for so many hunter days. So in this particular case, there's 250 hunter days. If we were to start splitting off, or that landowner would start selling off for ag purposes, any one of these tracts, be it 160 acres or 400 acres, then we have extra monitoring units, and our problem is how do you redesign a grazing system to cut out that, or how do you distribute the hunters? So that's the issue we've been running into, and this has occurred on some of our conservation easements where they're split out, and now we have two or three different landowners on this one property that we put a conservation easement on, and the public is having to go to each one of those landowners to get permission. And then the problem is, how do you distribute those hunters?
Follow-up, Governor?
please.
And so it's my understanding there, but there hasn't been any transfer of any portions of this particular piece of land in a 21 years since the original conservation easement. Is that correct?
Attorney General Fox, yes, that's correct.
And it's my understanding from just a comment you made a moment ago that we may have a number of these older conservation easement contracts that include this ability to subdivide for agricultural purposes. Is that correct?
I think we have about 20.
And does FWP look in the future to go revisit as many of those as possible?
I think it's as it comes up, we may revisit it. But in this particular case, it was not only the subdivision that came up. There was a 40-acre inholding in this property that was owned by BLM that the landowner acquired from BLM. So that was the stimulus to even start looking at this one, was we wanted to put that 40-acre tract under conservation easement, and then we started looking at the other terms. But yes, we would start looking at some of them as they would come up in areas where subdivision is now impacting areas.
Two follow-ups, Kevin.
Please.
So the 40-acre tract, if we didn't approve this today, that 40-acre tract would not be under any conservation easement held by FWP. Is that correct?
That's correct, Attorney General Fox, and it is in the center, the heart of the property.
And can you just generally tell me types of expenditures are authorized under the Habitat Montana program? What other uses could we have for this money?
For the $213,000, Attorney General Fox, that is just acquisition funding. So it would go towards a conservation easement, and I think this funding would fall under the 2016 requirements where we can only use it as conservation easement.
That's all I have.
Did that, her last answer, make mm-hmm. sense yeah. that prior to 2017?
Right.
There's a pool of money that can only be used for easements, not land acquisition.
That's correct, Governor.
So, Darlene, if I could ask just a couple more questions. So, I mean, the potential is, and right now you're managing this with as one block, not 44 160-acre parcels. Let's spin this out to subsequent land boards, and you have 44 owners of 160-acre parcels. How could you manage 2,500 days?
Well, hopefully that never happens, Governor, but we would have to distribute them for each one of those landowners, and the landowners would have to understand that when they're acquiring that property, there's public access on it, and how you distribute it is a problem. I'm not sure how we would do it, honestly.
And secondarily, Habitat Montana issues regularly come up in front of the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission. You said that there was at least one individual that said that it was you're paying too much for the easement. Was there concern about the overall thought of easing these ag properties?
They didn't address that, Governor.
Any additional questions or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Governor. Has your staff done a true legal analysis of the current easement that's in place? If it was there and the language calls for it to be in place in perpetuity, the ability to actually modify that easement, is there any language contained within the easement that allows modification of that easement?
Commissioner Rosendale, yes, there is.
Any additional questions or discussion?
Thank you, Governor. Darlene, it seems that this is for ag purposes only, but I heard feedlot and timber harvest as well. So it's my understanding that we're amending the original easement just for subdivision to not have subdividing. But are we amending it as well for these other uses?
Yes, Superintendent Arntzen, yes. All those issues that I brought up, the subdivision is the big one, but the water rights are also a very large issue now because in Colorado, for example, communities will acquire these water rights and use them for municipal purposes. So there is that risk that that landowner could potentially, I doubt that the Fitzgeralds would do this, but the potentially in the future the secondary landowner and the next landowner could sell those water rights. They're very senior. They're also they're very good water rights, and we just want to protect that. The timber harvesting is also an issue because this conservation easement that we would amend, we would go this new one, the amended, we call it a restated conservation easement. That would include the water rights protection. It would include the subdivision prohibition. It would provide the landowner more flexibility in timber harvesting. It would move a feedlot out of a riparian area onto a different area. It would accomplish all of those issues that were in the original conservation easement that we're finding problems with now. Not to mention the fact of if they did start selling this off, the rest rotation grazing system would be impacted, and then, of course, the public access. And the cost in the future to the department would be a monitoring unit that we have only one now. Potentially, we could have 44 in the future.
Thank you. Follow-up, please.
Yes.
Thank you. So, Darlene, you mentioned that 5%, and it came from an internal discussion. Could you share a little bit more on that?
Yes. Superintendent Arnton, what I did was I worked with an appraiser to try to establish a market for something like this, and there's just nothing out there. So when we originally did the conservation easement in 1996, the fee value of that property was $1.1 million when we paid $450,000 for the conservation easement, as it is today. And that was a 41% diminution. If I were to do the conservation easement that I'm suggesting, the diminution would be 50 to 60% based on the market. So I wasn't feeling comfortable offering 10 or 20% additional money to this landowner, but based on the current market at $1,000 an acre, I thought 5% was a fair compensation to the landowner to work with the department to amend that conservation easement, and 5% of the current fair market value of the rights that we'd be getting would be less the what conservation easement rights are already there, was about 5% or $213,000.
Thank you. Follow up, please. So, Darlene, urgency. Why urgency? Seems like there is urgency with this. I know within our staffer meetings, this is, you know, it came up just this last time and hasn't been. And I understand there's a process with the commission and that, but there seems to be a sense of urgency. Why?
Superintendent Arnton, I'm going to defer that to my staff, Kevin League. He's our monitoring, conservation easement monitoring steward, and he's had personal conversations with the landowners.
Thank you, Darlene.
Members, Governor, members of the Land Board, Superintendent Arnson, I am Kevin League, Stewardship Manager for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And to Secretary or Superintendent Arnson, to answer your specific question on urgency, simply this is a unique opportunity when the landowner is willing to amend the conservation easement. So the original motivation to amend the easement was to add 40 acres, the middle in holding to the property. But when that opportunity evolved, when discussions with the landowners, we took a closer look at the easement, and it's circa 1996. So there's some older language in the easement that today would not be included in a modern conservation easement. So this gave us the opportunity to clean that old conservation easement up, and some of the some of our least favorite language in those older conservation easements is this agricultural subdivision right language. As I have, I monitor all the conservation easements around the state. There's close to 90 of them. I am familiar with the management and the issues that go along with all of those easements. I visit them annually. And on properties where The subdivision at the app for agricultural purposes has taken place. We have had some very significant management hurdles with regards to hunting access, grazing, and issues such as that. So the point I'm trying to make is that back in the 90s, when the agricultural subdivision language was included in these conservation easements, I think it was a good-hearted gesture by the department to provide as much flexibility to the landowners as possible. But in this day and age today, we would not include that language in a modern conservation easement. We would not move forward on a deal that included that language. It's currently in a handful of our documents. So when the opportunity to include the 40-acre in-holding came up, I simply asked the landowner, is there other things that we can do in this conservation easement that would benefit you guys, that would benefit the department, the public, and would protect the legacy that the landowner is trying to leave in perpetuity? And they're willing. And I pointed out, I said, would you be willing to subdivide this property as the way it's stated in the easement? And they said, Kevin, we don't want to do that. And we don't want anybody else to be able to do that down the road. The current landowners weren't the folks that put the easement in place, but their parents did. So it's an urgency because the opportunity to do this just doesn't come along every day. You have to have a willing landowner and a willing set of circumstances that the stars align, and we have that now.
Thank you, Mr. Lake. Question, please?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor. So, Mr. Lake, efficiency is where we need to be, but I had heard from the Attorney General that we do have some at least 20 pieces of old language dealing with old conservation easements that may not reflect the modern use of today. Is there a way then that we could look at this instance to go ahead and see how we can be more efficient, not just with the money that is there that and the maintenance that is involved? And you say you have 90 conservation easements that are under your purview. It would seem to me that this would be a opportunity, as you had said, to look at all of them rather than just looking at one individually. I am concerned about a value of 5%. Maybe that might be low. Maybe it might be too high. Got to start somewhere. So money-wise, then, how much management per easement are you even looking at? Do we have a figure that if I'm looking at efficiency, that there might be, Mr. League?
Superintendent Arntzen, I will have to refer to my colleague, Darlene Edge. I don't have an answer for you on specific dollar amounts per easement.
Thank you, Mr. League. So, Governor, at this time, I don't know in discussion and offering this up, there's so much information that I think I'd like to have further, and I wouldn't want to disparage the amount of conversation that the departments have had with landowners. We need to listen to landowners. Is there a way that we could defer this action? And I don't know the process that it would be, but at this time I would like more information.
Well, why don't before we make any decision, because that would either be voting down or substitute motion, I don't know if anyone else wants to speak on this. From my perspective, there's a number of things. That at the end of the day, this easement, this updating an easement from over 20 years ago, affords and ensures long-term that folks will have access and hunter access. It affords us the opportunity to do meaningful timber management. We're on 7,000 acres in this area. As of today, we don't have that ability to do. It helps create predictability and certainty when landowners and others are interfacing with state government. And I think that to the extent that any of the concerns, from my perspective at least, have merit, which on this piece I'm not certain that they do, but I guess I would submit that the proper place to have that discussion is in front of the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission. We as land board members certainly end up because we have some oversight responsibility over all state lands, certainly have the opportunity to pass on this, but I think where the sleeves are actually rolled up and the discussions are had on how that Habitat Montana money should be allocated and spent for the betterment of all Montanans, typically is happening at the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission. Not to say that we don't have a very important role. I mean, I don't know of, and either the general might recall or others, I do not recall a time where, especially something as a $200,000 easement, that this board has rejected the ability of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission to continue on with folks. So from my perspective, at least, I think that this is a good idea. I think I hear your concern, Superintendent, about the additional easements, and that at some point there may be the discussions of how best to handle those. Now, later on in the package today, we'll be dealing with road easements. County by county, they're purchasing at times, finally perfecting easements that should have been done decades and decades ago. So that there are times that I think that it will be a case-by-case basis, and when we have an opportunity like this, I think it would be unfortunate to send both to that landowner and others dealing with these that there's, I guess, apprehension from this board. So my preference would be to go forward, but I also recognize that it would be great to hear from the rest of the land, or the rest of the land board members.
Mr. Governor, I'd like to make a substitute motion that we defer action on this particular piece, the 817-2, until the September meeting, so that we have additional time to get information about the value of the easement, how it was established, how it ties in with the existing easement, make sure that we have the, I would personally like to look at the legal authority to make sure that, about the amending that easement, and just gather additional information even from the FWP board members themselves.
Is there a second?
I second.
Discussion.
Governor, just to answer Commissioner Rosendale's earlier question about whether or not the it's legal to amend these conservation easements, on page 13, paragraph N of the original easement, there's specific language, which I won't read in its entirety, that contemplates that, in fact, there may be circumstances, but that you'd want to amend a conservation easement, but it has to be agreeable to both parties. And that same language is in the proposed new conservation easement on page 13, paragraph N. And your point, Governor, is well taken, that I hadn't thought about this before, is that the board here doesn't consider or have the authority to determine when and how to spend Habitat Montana money, but we do have the authority to put the kibosh on that expenditure. The forum in which these things might be determined, I agree with you, this is important for us to consider as well. I don't know what happened at that commission meeting, whether there was public comment and, you know, whether there were lots of questions. I'm assuming it was much like what we do here, but in any event, I hadn't considered that point, and I think it's an important one to make.
Darlene, if there's a month-long deferral, which often happens with agenda items, would that have any impact on the conservation easement? The proposed conservation easement?
Governor, no. I think we could safely wait till September.
Any other questions? I suppose for the comedy of the overall board, then I at least will be supporting a one-month deferral with the strong, I guess, expression of hope that this is taken up at our next meeting.
Call a vote.
Yep. All those in favor of the substitute motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. We'll see this on the September meeting. Next action item.
Since that went really well, we're going to invite DEQ up to the table and talk about a land acquisition.
Good morning, Governor Bullock and Board of Land Commissioners. For the record, my name is Autumn Coleman, and I'm the Abandoned Mineland Program Manager for DEQ. I'll go very briefly into what the Abandoned Mineland Program does and then talk about the Beltwater Treatment Plant. So the Abandoned Mineland Program gets money based on a per-ton fee of coal mined in Montana. That comes back to the state to reclaim legacy abandoned mines, or pre-law mines. And one of those is the Belt Creek problem. So Belt Creek is polluted with heavy metals that come from the acid mine drainage from those abandoned coal mines in that community. I was there on Friday, and the whole creek is orange all the way through the community. So we're here today asking for permission from the Board of Land Commissioners for approval for DEQ to acquire four parcels of land from MDT to build a water treatment plant to clean up Belt Creek and restore Belt Creek to its beneficial uses. I'm here for questions, and also representatives of MDT are here for questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam. Public comment. Is there a motion?
Mr. Governor, I would move that we approve the item number 817-3, the land acquisition for Belt Acid Mine Drainage Water Treatment Facility.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Any discussion?
Governor, I would just say I think this is an important project. I used to work for DEQ and do some legal work for the Abandoned Mines program, which does great work. As long as we have coal mining in Montana, we will have the ability to get these legacy sites cleaned up, and I think that's an important note to make as well.
Any additional questions or comments?
I had a question.
Please.
Governor, Autumn, or somebody, so after, if we acquire these four parcels of land, then once it is cleaned up, what do we anticipate doing with those four parcels?
Governor Bullock, Secretary Stapleton, DEQ plans on retaining those properties to ensure that the water treatment plant operates in perpetuity.
So, yeah, and just in case it's unclear, so the acquisition of the lands from MDT effectively then is the location where the water treatment plant will be located.
Governor Bullock, that's true.
Thank you.
Any additional questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Next action item.
Land Board members, the next item four is the timber sale Meadow Ridge in Lincoln County. Revenue accruing to common schools at a value of $280,000 as a minimum bid. The timber sale is located 36 miles west of Kalispell, six harvest units, 2.44 million board feet. 21 miles of road maintenance. We recommend the Meadow Ridge timber sale.
Is there any public comment? Is there a motion?
Governor, I move approval of item 817-4.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion passes. Next action item.
Item 5, cabin home sites set minimum bid for sale. Sale 892, Flathead County, beneficiary Montana Tech. Bid price at $460,000. Land Board members, you will recall this was a contested parcel when the department first brought the appraisal to the landowner. We went through a hearing. The hearings examiner, we had a value of $560,000. The hearings examiner provided a level of $471,000. There was an issue over the appraiser in the second value of $471,000. We brought it back to the landowner with the department. We agreed and split 50-50 the cost of a certified general appraiser to provide a third value. The department had committed to the landowner that whatever that value was, and they committed to us they would agree to pay. It came in at $460,000. That is what we are recommending for the parcel on Echo Lake. Any public comment? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
Yes.
Please.
Question. Okay. Let me think who's going to be the best one that might answer this. Director, I'm going to point it at you, and you can...
Yep, sure. Okay.
I've looked at all the information contained in the appraisal, and one of the things that it makes reference to is the privacy and how privacy on these peninsula lots, because the neighbors are typically farther away from each other, increases the value. And it states that the improvements on this specific lot are located to the far one side. So my first question would be, is there anything that would prohibit someone from building an additional, making an additional improvement on that property farther to the, looks like, east, so that it would be able to enjoy the privacy that that site offers?
You mean once they own it, or
once they own it,
stays in lease?
Correct. Yeah, and Governor, Auditor Rosendale, no, there would, once it was in fee title, whether there's a local county land restriction, I doubt it, as long as they didn't subdivide it. Septic tanks can be a real issue.
That's what I was.
So whether they could properly get a septic tank on the property, again, a local jurisdictional issue, I don't know. But there's nothing that within the fee title transfer that would restrict it.
If Sean or anybody has any additional information about if the soils would be suitable for either an additional septic drain tiles or to accommodate an additional residence.
Governor, again, for the record, Sean Thomas, Trustlands Administrator at the NRC. Governor Bullock, Auditor Rosendale, so what a lot of these Echo Lake lots, and I just quizzed Emily Cooper, who was sitting behind me there, who's been on this site many times. I've been on the site myself once. The topography is an issue. A lot of these Echo Lake lots are relatively steep from the access road down to the lakeshore. So topography would be somewhat of a limitation. I hesitate to say that they couldn't go ahead and move some other types of improvements to a more private part of the lot. That's certainly within the realm of possibility. There's, I think, like the director said, local issues with sanitarians and topography. That being said, you see a lot of things done on lakefront property in northwestern Montana. It's all about how much money somebody's willing to invest to do these sorts of things. So I think it's definitely within the realm of possibility that somebody could move. Our appraisal instructions are to appraise the property as it currently is, appraise the current improvements and the current land value as if it were bare, so, if that helps.
Any additional questions or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Governor. Director Tubbs, we're going down. Is this normal? I mean, it seems odd, and I know this whole property, even prior to the new land board as it was seated. So this came to them, to the old one, and now we have basically inherited this. But we're going down, $100,000.
Governor, Superintendent, there is nothing usual about any of these cabin site sales. This is a program that's all of 3 years old. It is atypical to be even in this kind of business of selling state lands like this. Mm-hmm. But after over a decade of wrestling this down at the state legislature, the ownership that people feel about their leases, and it's a modest improvement at $75,000. This isn't a mansion that's sitting on the property. The property is way more value than the home site. No, so with the hearings process we created, I think people rightfully, questioned the appraiser that was providing testimony at that hearings process. It was a surprise to the department. I'm sure a welcome surprise to the landowner or lessee that it went down, but that is the process we agreed to. The generally certified appraiser, it is a certain amount of art as well as skill that allows you to do appraisals, and while we
We think that this process was a fair one between a seller and a buyer. And we had made commitments. You are correct. We started at a higher level, and it's down from there. And it still has the potential of competitive bids. It's a very valuable piece of property. What you're doing today is setting the minimum value. The only caveat to that is the lessee could pull it and remain in a lease if somebody tried to bid against it. But it is a competitive opportunity that will come up in September of a valuable property on Echo Lake.
Governor, may I ask a question?
Sure.
I haven't looked at the actual lease. Do we know when this particular lease expires or is up for renewal?
I would defer to staff on that one.
Governor, Attorney General, 2020, the lease would be up for renewal. Staff happen to have that information. And just as a follow-up to Superintendent Artson's question, I would say that, in fact, several of the appraisals have gone down from our original appraisal during the hearings process. What's different about this one is, personally, I took exception with the evidence presented at the hearings and disagreed with the hearings examiner.
Okay.
Based on that, we decided to, you know, how are we going to salvage this deal where they're not going forward, or we're going to do some other, to provide us with more assurance that the second appraisal that he had contracted was in fact accurate, was this, we're going to agree to do a general certified. So I sort of own part of the responsibility that this is an unusual one that you see before you today. But in fact, the hearings examiners in several instances have recommended, and we have brought forward then a lower value based on the outcome of that hearings process as established by the legislature.
Thank you.
Additional questions, comments? Senator Rosendale.
Yeah, you know, some of the things that they were basing the value on, again, were the ability to enjoy the privacy with the lot, which I think looks like it could be accommodated with a new structure. And if someone typically is going to invest $500,000 or more dollars for the piece of land, then they're probably going to make additional improvements on that site and not be satisfied with the improvements that are currently there, which is based on a $75,000 value. The other thing is there's notation about a lot of times when these lots are a little bit larger, the road tends to bisect the parcel, which then your value really is based completely upon the site that is located on the lake, and then everything that would be across the road didn't really add additional value, which we don't have that situation here. We've got the road that comes down to the site does not bisect it, so you do have basically a two-acre site that you are going to be able to enjoy the full privacy. And then as Superintendent Arntzen made reference to, it's my understanding that the values of the properties in the Flathead region right now are increasing, not decreasing. So I just don't see where we should be getting a value that would be going down over the 12-month period from when this whole process originated. So I would just like to see us begin the set of a higher, if you will, beginning price, bid price.
Any other questions or comments?
So just to be clear, the motion on the table is to set the minimum bid price at $460,000, is correct?
Yeah, I have sincere respect for your knowledge of real estate as well, Otto Rosendale. I think one of the things that I hear time and time again from Montanans, generally, to the extent that the frustrations with government, it's about predictability and certainty. Predictability and certainty in permitting and licensing and transacting business with the state. And I, too, want to maximize the value that we get for the trust. I look at this as the leaseholder entered into a good faith process with the state, split half the costs of this subsequent appraisal. And we got what we got out of that appraisal. I'm comforted a bit by the fact that if this is this cherry piece of land that certainly, since we're setting the floor, not the ceiling, that another bidder could come in, because in a relative sense, the $75,000 for the structure on it isn't that significant, so that someone might actually bid it by competitive. I worry a little bit that, indeed, in this meeting alone, dang near every agenda item, there's an appraisal. In the easement section, I think there's 8 different appraisals. And we as a board certainly have the opportunity to question the value of easements. We could question the value of every single individual ag lease. And we would be well within our constitutional purview, because all of our jobs here is to maximize the value of this trust for the long term. I think as I look at the objective of the board to being maximizing the value of the trust over the long term, if what we're doing is really undermining the predictability and certainty that Montanans have of going into these processes with this, or if there's apprehension, whether you're a 7,100-acre rancher or a cabin site lessee, and I mean, you all have dealt with these cabin site lessees on the legislative side. It seems like in my 12 years, nary a meeting has gone by where there hasn't been some conflict and challenges, certainly with cabin site lessees. But if folks end up expressing apprehension about the predictability and certainty of the processes, I think that could actually diminish the returns that we get over the long term. So, to the extent that, I mean, right now the motion's for $460,000. I'll be voting for it. And to the extent that, you know, you could either vote, folks could either vote against it or provide a substitute motion. But I think long term, as we're looking at both this cabin site leasing to sale program and the processes employed, that while I certainly wish it was more money, while I wish that agreed upon appraisal had come out for $580, I'm going to stick with what we got.
Governor, could I make one comment too? That as the next agenda item will show, this is not the last step in this process. We will go to sale with a competitive sale. That process will go forward, and you will have one more opportunity and a final acceptance of that sale price. So the question of the competitive bid can be answered with certainty in the next phase. Oftentimes we're criticized about how long it takes to go through these sales processes. These are 3 bites at the apple. This is the second bite. I just wanted to point that out for the board.
Governor, I've never heard you wax so philosophical. It must be the eclipse or something.
I don't know if it's for me or everybody else on the board, but yeah.
I just wanted to say that's a good point, Director, that if the landowner offers the minimum bid and there are no other bids, we can still say no.
Final comments, if I could.
Certainly.
Or at least from me. And I appreciate that, but predictability, once we have established what we are willing to accept as a minimal bid, I think then we have made a commitment to anyone out there in the general public, whether it's the current tenant or someone else, that we are willing to accept that, and to not at that point then extremely undermines the credibility of this body. And so that's why I would like to make sure that we have a number on there now that we're comfortable with. And going through this process, I don't think that we can ignore that we also have an acceptable, legitimate appraisal that was conducted last year as well. That was it for $565,000. And we have all the information on that as well. So at this point, based upon all of that, knowing that I want to provide this predictability, then I want to make sure that there's a number that is acceptable out there if it did get bid by someone that I would approve. So I would like to make a substitute motion to amend the price for the cabin home site 817-5 and amend the minimal bid to be $500,000.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion.
Said, upon what appraisal is the $500,000 built on, or is it just cut the baby in half?
Well, it's based upon the information that they have provided in these appraisals and then trying to establish the pertinent facts that were literally ignored in this last appraisal that was done when they start making references to, again, the road being bisecting the parcel and or the improvements being located on one side, so ignoring the fact that there would be the potential for other improvements to be erected on a more private setting within the site and trying to establish the additional value that certainly brings to this site.
So, and we recognize that, I guess, appraisals are, I think, as they start out, art versus science. So at least in your professional estimation, or those two factors would mean it should be at least $40,000 greater if an appraiser looked at it.
I do. I mean, we have someone who thought that those exact same variables would have increased the value to $565,000, and I'm not quite there because we are not 100% sure on the cost of relocating or building additional improvements and what it would take to make sure that they could be accommodated dependent upon the soil varieties.
Any additional questions or comments?
So I have a question. Thank you. Director Tubbs, when it comes to this, I know this is in its infancy, 3 years since the legislature has said that this is the process. I'm uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not experienced in land use, land acquisition, anything that might deal with land brokerage. So picking a number out of the air, but yet not to go as high as what was originally with the appraisal, because this seems like we want a medium point here. So I don't know about that. Have we ever done that before in the three-year history, as young as this program has been?
Governor, Superintendent, I don't believe on a cabin site sale that we have recommended a different number. There was a vote in the last land board on a grazing lease, competitive grazing lease, where the land board chose that the department's recommendation was too high and it was lowered. It is certainly within the authority of the land board to make such a motion.
Thank you. And Governor, I have your same thoughts on predictability. That's something that Montanans deserve, and I want to make sure that happens. I do know that we have a constitutional right to make sure that we start at a bid, but that also it gives as much money as it can to schools. And, of course, this is going to Montana Tech. So I'm a little uncomfortable, but I am very uncomfortable with the lower bid. So I don't know if I need more discussion. I don't want to necessarily defer this, but, I mean, I want to take an expert advice. No offense.
Yeah, and
I thought you were.
I won't suggest, Superintendent, that I'm an expert on appraisals by any measure. And I think that even how we go from 460 to 500, it seems, a little bit of back of a napkin. But I also want to respect the processes of challenging things like this, where literally every one of these easements, Northwestern Energy on page 21 is only paying $100 for that 20-foot strip across the Clark Fork River. I mean, it may well be worth saying, well, it should probably be $110. And I think the challenge that we start to run into is, you're absolutely right, it's not just our charge, it's our obligation to maximize the value for the school trust. But it's also the recognition that we're maximizing that value for the long term, not just for the August meeting. And to express my concern again, that I think that Montanans have some expectation of predictability and certainty out of this board, I have never, of course, in these 12 years, been in one of these meetings where a Cabot site lessee comes in and says, you're not charging enough. And when we went through the numerous iterations, which finally got you legislation, it was some of the most contentious meetings we ever had here, because cabin site lessees, who often have these properties for generationally, were saying we're getting priced out on both sides, the leases and the ability to buy. I don't, while I do want to make sure that we're maximizing the value, what got us in the whole cabin site leasing issues initially was litigation from Montrust, saying that we weren't maximizing the value of the trust. When we've gone through a process where a private citizen pays for half of an appraisal, as does the state, a process where trying to find what the right answer is, and presumably we'd be bound by that right answer, my concern is that the difference of $40,000 on this one piece of property could be magnified as folks are saying, oh, I don't know what this land board's going to do next. Secretary.
Governor, I support the substitute motion. I'm of the mindset, I think it's good, you know, we're going to be together for 4 years. We can set the tone of whether we challenge some of the way the process has been done in the past. Not that we won't come to the same conclusions, but several times, you know, and I'm new, I think we have new expertise on the board. You know, Commissioner Rosendale clearly brings something that the previous board may not have had. And I've been told several times, when usually quiet, you know, that, well, historically we don't rock the boat. We'll get two or three chances to you vote on these. But then when they do come up or somebody has an idea, then we use circular logic. Well, we shouldn't do this. So I for one, would be willing to look at a lot of the different ways that we do things. And I know that we don't want to get into the weeds. But I certainly support this motion. I would support any of the other commissioners also if you had a desire to look at the way we do business. If we've only been doing something for 3 years, we know it's not perfect. We know the legislature's not perfect. We know none of this process is perfect. And sometimes applying pressure or asking difficult questions, why we do things the way, you know, why are easements forever, you know, why can't they be 99 years, you know, I realize that maybe this isn't the best place to ask those questions, but when do we really have the time to the five of us get together and talk about these? So I do like order. I don't want these meetings to be forever. I'm sure, Governor, you don't want them to last forever, but I'd be willing to spend a few extra minutes each meeting to dive deeper, and I do support Commissioner Rosendale's motion.
There are other questions or comments?
If I could, please. Thank you. For the record, I'd like to know why we did not have the 500 and what was it, 560? 560. Why was that? Why did that not go forward? Who did not accept it? Did we not accept it? Why are we now at this point?
Governor, Superintendent, under the statute, the lessee has the right to appeal the appraisal of the department. That process was taken forward by the lessee. They appealed. The hearings examiner of that hearing considered information that was brought in by the lessee and recommended the price of $471,000 as an outcome of that appeal and hearings decision. We brought that to the board. You saw Administrator Thomas say that he didn't agree with the evidence because the appraiser in that case was not qualified, a generally certified appraiser that the state could contract with. It was just a real estate appraiser. That's what triggered the third appraisal that the private landowner cost-shared with the state in an agreement that we would bring forward whatever that appraised value as a recommendation to this board.
And that was brought to the board when, Director? $471,000.
It was 3 months ago.
Governor, members of the board, just a small correction on behalf of the director. We had it on the board agenda item as I was looking at that.
Oh, that's right.
Prepared for the meeting, I decided that I had questions about the appraisal, and we moved it from. So the board has not seen the 471 number, but to the process that's established by the legislature, 560 was out. The hearings examiner, we lost on that argument. The hearings examiner finding was 471, and so then we led down to the road of. I wasn't quite frankly comfortable with that based on the fact that the appraiser that they submitted the appraisal from was not a general certified appraiser, which is our standard. Not that this appraisal was wrong. In fact, looking at the entire body of evidence now with three separate appraisals, that appraiser was closer to the third appraiser than he was the first. But, yeah, so just as that clarification.
Governor Walshon's up here real quick. So just a hypothetical here. Motion. If the motion passes to set the minimum bid at $500,000, the landowner, as I understand it, can bid that amount, and anyone else could bid that amount. Is there a deadline in which that bids need to be accepted? And then that's the first question. The second question is, if no one makes an offer, then can this property be nominated again, and if so, when? Is there a waiting period, or how does that work?
Governor General Fox, so the process, the specific timeline, so the board would approve the setting of, say, the motion passes a minimum bid at $500,000. We would contact the lessee, let them know that, and our process would begin going forward to an auction. Which Emily could fill you in on more details if you had more specific questions about exactly what those time frames are. As far as, you know, what there's two possibilities. He agrees to continue forward at $500,000 as the minimum bid, and he goes through the process. We do our advertising, and we have an auction. Two, he says that's too high, and he can stop the process either now or later. So he would continue leasing or not, and that's all sort of, you know, unknown to us at this point in time. His lease doesn't expire for a couple of more years. What we have heard from this individual is that the original 560 was just far out of line based on his personal experience and watching property markets values in the area. He was not willing to pay that if he would have, you know, ultimately if the hearings examiner would have left and we brought forward a 560, based on what he's telling us, he would not have proceeded. I don't know what his comfort level number is. Certainly he's fine with, you know, that 460, 470 number, you know, that he had in his hearing, he was fine with. But I don't know what he would do going forward. He's a out-of-country lessee and potentially is indicated that he may not even continue leasing, in which case we would get this property, we'd have these improvements to deal with. That could take up to 3 years or more before we could legally resolve the ownership and the improvements title. And then we could potentially nominate and bring that back forward again if they cease to be the lessee. I suppose that if this process failed, he could also nominate and try to, you know, get into the process again at some future date. But as long as he was the lessee, I think that would probably be unlikely in the near term. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Any other questions or comments? All in favor of the substitute motion to the minimum bid at $500,000, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Nay.
Nay.
You got three.
Three ayes?
Yep.
All right. Motion passes. Next action item.
Item six is land banking acquisition, final approval for purchase, Berkeley Road Farm. This is an acquisition by the department of a agricultural property in Yellowstone County benefiting Montana Tech. Average rate of return improving from the proceeds of the sales of 2.6 to the long-term value of 2.8% rate of return for this property. It's 1,266 acres and some change of mixed dryland agriculture with a little bit of grazing. The appraised value came in at $1 million. The purchase price is at $979,265. The proposed closing date is September 15th. We recommend the final approval for purchase of the Berkeley Road Farm.
Any public comment?
Governor and members of the commission, my name is Randy Knowles from Great Falls, Montana. On just a comment, I've attended some oil and gas meetings,
And there's chemicals in the ground that are far more valuable than oil and gas. One that I remember is benzene, something like $500 a barrel. So I'm just curious whether the mineral rights that the owners want to hold are oil and gas, or if oil, gas, and all other things that might come out of the ground, because that could be a good deal. That could be a good deal. And then one other thing is this proposal is well described and sketched out, but I would really like to see a section on no shooting zones for potential buildings, and particularly on this one because there is an inholding, and I didn't take the time to look at where buildings are and things, but I think in the future, if we pay attention to places where sportsmen shouldn't be shooting, that might potentially impact the price, or at least it would be fair disclosure that we don't get to hunt on the whole parcel. Thank you.
Additional public comment. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Next action item.
Item 7 is the easement package for a number of counties. Northwestern providing a great number of historic utilities, Madison County with a historic county road access, a private access bridge, private roads, a pipeline crossing, and an electric utility, and a historic county road in Garfield County. We recommend approval of the easement package.
Is there any public comment?
Governor Bullock, members of the commission, my name is Randy Knowles from Great Falls, Montana. On the easement for the Anthony family down in the Gallatin Valley, as I mentioned about a year ago, I really take exception to using the phrase that normal farming and ranching operations. I'm pretty sure this family from Henderson, Nevada is not farming or ranching. But if they are, more power to them to be able to do it from that far away. And so maybe we need statutes changed or something, but I'm pretty sure this is a private family cabin, and I have no objections to them getting to their property, but, you know, let's call a dog a dog.
Any additional questions or comments?
I'd make some comments, Governor, if I could. The Anthony property, looked into that, and it seems that the only reason that it's necessary that it even comes before us for this easement is because of the right to cross over the riverbed, and that it's not going through any other public property nor accessing any other public property. It's literally just because it's crossing over the riverbed, and that the maintenance of the bridge even is taken care of by the private parties. So I feel very comfortable with that easement.
Any additional questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed?
Did we actually?
I don't think we
Oh, I didn't do a motion.
So moved.
Second. There we go. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes. Action item, our informational item 8.
Item 8 is required a real estate commercial development report, and I'm sure it will just take a brief amount of time since the eclipse is within the hour.
The eclipse started.
Governor, members of the Land Board, for the record, I'm Sean Thomas, Administrator for the Trust Land Management Division. Per our real estate programmatic plan that we put forward in the early 2000s, we're required to bring forward to you each year a list of the projects that we are currently working on with relation to real estate development in the communities that are in the, where we have property that are sort of in the path of development. So this list is really a budgetary tool. We get a certain amount of our budget allocated towards what we call the project identification. list, and we have the project identification team that goes through and looks for opportunities to do things towards putting entitlements on property for potential future development. So this is a pretty comprehensive list of all of the opportunities that we're sort of pursuing in different places around the state. This year we added in some color brochure pages to give you a little bit more detail and some maps and perspective on what's going on. If in the interest of time, I won't go through all of them. You will see Spring Prairie in Kalispell. That's our Section 36. It's just kind of our largest and most lucrative commercial development that we've been working on now for quite some time. And just as an interesting note, we had a RFP due on that came in last week, and we had two successful respondents to that both put in good proposals, and it looks like we'll have another big chunk as a master development for the Spring Prairie thing that will bring in substantial revenues for the trust beneficiaries and annual lease payments in excess of $100,000 a year. So the board will be seeing that upcoming potentially in September.
Thanks, Sean.
That, unless there's any questions.
Questions from the board? Thank you very much both for putting the information together and the good work that you all do. Now is the time on our agenda for public comment on items not otherwise on the agenda. Is there any public comment? Anybody else other than Mr. Knowles, too? I'm going to keep you fairly short this time, Mr. Knowles.
So on the previous comment, I hope that Sean's working with FWP and the City Commission. I contacted what I'll call the planning team in Great Falls. They have not had a heads up yet on this Fox Farm, and river development, Great Falls, is really important. So my grandmother came up with a phrase in 1964 when I was herding sheep, because the river took all of the fences out, and that is, what the Lord giveth, the river taketh away. And the river will doeth that, and this little parcel of land. But for the economic development of the town as a whole, we are quickly recognizing the importance of river frontage. And remember, only Portland has more city parks in Great Falls, Montana.
Now, wait a minute.
That's true.
In the world?
No.
In the country?
Probably in the West.
Sure, it's not per capita.
We're narrowing it down.
All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
We have a lot of undeveloped parks in Great Falls, but Sheila Rice is gradually developing them one by one as she builds houses. And I have finished my state parks visit. The last two were the Marias River Park and Game Range, and the Wild Horse Island. I highly recommend Wild Horse Island. And we saw all five horses and some sheep and some deer. It was a wonderful trip. But more importantly, I learned about the geology of the area and the pictographs in that area. And you can actually, if you've hit the right outfitter, you can book a trip just to see Indian pictographs around Flathead Lake. And then I was sad that there is no agenda item for the reciprocal easement between BLM and DNRC for the Salmon Road, but I will patiently wait for next month.
Any additional public comment?
Can I make one comment?
Please.
It's been a while since the Otter Creek coal tracks and Arch Coal and all of that information has been before this body, and this particular group hasn't heard it before. So I was wondering if sometime in the future, whether it's September, October, whatever, that we could have DEQ come before us and give us an update on the status of the permit applications that are in place right now, and possibly with DNRC where the leases are right now with all of that, because that is an incredibly large investment that the state has, and the school trust certainly has. And I'd like to have an update and have more information on it if it's possible.
Sure, we'll take it under advisement. Any other questions, issues?
Governor, I move we adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion passes.